The moment you enter the water, you become a sea creature. A whole other world opens up in front of you, where you can do anything and fear nothing. This is the biggest, most important ecosystem on the planet, and it's in trouble.
The basic chemistry of our ocean is changing faster than it has ever changed in the history of the planet.
We're seeing very, very major effects on reef systems already.
100 million sharks a year killed by humans.
There will not be any fish by 2048 if we continue to do what we're doing right now. It is ecological insanity.
We're bringing on a mass extinction in the oceans, and that's something that will change everything on our planet.
It's a crime, not just of the century, but a crime of all time.
Without the oceans, we literally will die.
I set out to make a movie because I believe that if people knew what was going on, they'd do something about it.
Big changes do happen all the time, and they don't happen because governments decide the right things. They happen because people create that change.
This is our task. You know, it's not about, are you going to be a doctor, a lawyer, or a secretary? It's about, how are you going to change the world?
When everything you love and everything you depend on is in jeopardy, action is no longer an option. It is a necessity.
We will be the ones that will be suffering from what the governments are not doing today. It's not future generations, but it's us right now.
And that is a trailer to the film Sea of Life. And we have the director of that film live in the virtual studio with us here on Forward Radio and Sustainability Now with me, Justin Mogg, coming to you live from our studios here in the Hayburn building for a special pledge drive edition of the show. I've got not just the director, Julia Barnes, in the studio, but I also have our good friends, Ruth Newman. Hey, Ruth.
Hello, hello.
From Election Connection. And Hart Hagen is here from the Climate Report. Welcome, Hart.
Hello, Justin.
It's so great to have everybody here. Hi, Julia. Welcome. Where are you joining us from?
Thanks. I'm joining you from Burlington, Ontario, Canada.
All right. An international program here today. So cool. We're going to talk about the oceans, as you just heard in that trailer today, and some of the threats and possible solutions to what's going on in our oceans today. This is Solutions Focused Radio. We like to talk about solutions here on the program. But before we do, one important solution is that you all go to forwardradio.org right now and help keep us on the air. Ruth, we've been doing this for 7 years now. It's amazing.
I know. I'm in shock. I can't believe it, honestly.
Yeah. You had this little germ of an idea way back 10, 12 years ago, right? And started organizing and raising money. And then finally, on April 9th of 2017, we flipped the switch and went on air. And this show has been broadcasting ever since then, bringing you voices you're not going to hear anywhere else, like Julia Barnes today, but also bringing you news and information and connecting you to your community. I mean, that was kind of the vision when you started the station, right, Ruth?
Exactly. And what better time than now to have a station that is open and engaged with the public, local, gives people a chance to have their voices heard. This is the time, as I'm sure we'll talk about today, with the problem with the oceans.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the time, and we need your support at forwardradio.org. You can chip in whatever you can to help keep us on the air, but we're trying to raise $7,000 in honor of our 7th anniversary by the time we have our big birthday party on Saturday, April 13th, which we also want to invite you all to. That's going to be at the Logan Street Market this year, a new location for us, and a lot of exciting things are going to go on. You want to give us a flavor for what's going to happen there, Ruth?
Yes, there'll be food, speaking of flavor. And there'll be discounts, food vendor discounts. We're having happy birthday cake and dancing and a live band. And we are having a special guest, Charles Booker, who's going to be there to really spread the word and inspire us. So there's just all kinds of reasons for going. We're having a live auction.
Yes, a silent auction. There's going to be a silent auction. All kinds of great items available. Yeah, this won't be an auction like where you raise your paddle. No. We could do that one year, but this is a silent auction where you write down your bids and lots of great stuff to take home, including a hardcover book called Extraction Politics from a U of L professor of communications, Nick Palowitz, who I'm going to interview on next week's show. So stay tuned for that. But a whole bunch of great gifts available. And we're also going to be connecting with our new friends in Leeds, England, right,
yes,
Ruth?
East Leeds Community Radio.
Our sister city.
You should come just to hear their accent, if for no other reason.
Yeah, it was a good time. You heard some of them on this program a few weeks back. So we're going to make a new connection on April 13th, 5 to 8 p.m. at the Logan Street Market. But right now, we need you to go to forwardradio.org. We will thank our donors live on the air. There's lots of great premiums you can pick up only during the pledge drive through April 13th, and you can wear your Forward Radio pride with you wherever you go. So we'll be giving updates about the pledge drive throughout the program, but with no further ado, let's dive into the oceans, shall we? Hart, I know Julie is a good friend of yours. You want to tell us about your connection and how you got into this issue of protecting our oceans?
Well, I met Julia because she and I both started reading Derek Jensen and following his work. Derek Jensen is one of the authors of Bright Green Lies. In my 5 years of climate reporting, to me, Bright Green Lies is like the Bible as far as a critique of so-called renewable energy, recycling, electric vehicles, batteries, etc. And Julia will have to tell her story about how she met Derek Jensen. But I think, Julia, I first discovered you because you made the movie version, the documentary version of Bright Green Lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how we got in touch. And yeah, it was kind of a crazy way that I ended up connecting with Derek, because I was going to all of these big climate rallies where people were, you know, marching in the streets saying we want subsidies for solar panels and wind turbines. And it was at one of these events that an activist told me he was inspired by the work of Derek Jensen.
Ah.
And, you know, I went home and I looked up Derek and I ended up interviewing him and learning about his book, Bright Green Lies, which was a real eye-opener in terms of how destructive the solar panel and wind turbine industry is. So it was a real complete shift in terms of my understanding on those issues. And I just thought, this is such an important thing that's not being talked about. So yeah, I made the film version of that to get that message out to more people. And yeah,
and all of which. That was your first documentary?
That was my second documentary.
Oh, second. Okay.
Yeah. So my journey into documentary filmmaking really started in the ocean, which is, I think, where we're going to be focusing today. But yeah, my first documentary is Sea of Life, the one that you just played the trailer for. And yeah, I started in the ocean and have remained very much concerned about what's happening there.
Well, this is great. It's so great to have a 12-time award-winning environmental filmmaker here with us on the program today. If you want to learn more about the films, you can go to brightgreenlies.com or seaoflifemovie.com. Let's talk about why you became a filmmaker. I know you're probably an activist first, right? So what happened? How did you get into filmmaking?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really an activist or a filmmaker or an environmentalist to start with. I was a high school student. I was 16 years old, and I watched a documentary called Revolution, which was about the big issues facing life on the planet. And I was like learning for the first time that the world's coral reefs and rainforests and fish populations are expected to be wiped out by the middle of the century. And I'm like, this is happening in my lifetime. Like, this was the future we were headed towards. And I just couldn't get that out of my head. And I couldn't really go back to my regular life and just pretend like everything was okay. And so I kind of went back to, you know, high school, and like everyone around me is obsessed with clothes and TV shows and like, stuff that just seemed so trivial in comparison. And like, nobody knew or cared very much about what was happening to the ocean. So I wanted to do something, and I wanted to start right away because the issues were so urgent. So I took about a week to figure out what I was going to do. And then I said, I'm going to make a documentary.
Wow.
I picked up a camera. I signed up for some scuba diving lessons. And that's how, Sea of Life began.
Well, it doesn't look amateurish at all. If you watch the trailer that we just played at seaoflifemovie.com, you could see that some of this is really stunning work. I'm really impressed. And it's such important work, too, I think, because the oceans can seem so mysterious, far away, otherworldly, right? And yet they make up the majority of our planet.
Yeah, I know. The oceans are so out of sight and out of mind for most people. And yeah, we don't think about it, but we're connected to the ocean all the time, whether we ever touch it or not. The ocean is touching us. Like 2 out of every 3 breaths we take come from plankton in the ocean.
Wow.
They come from the plant life. Yeah, we tend to think like trees and plants on land produce oxygen, which they do, but a far lesser amount. The ocean is the major source of the oxygen that we all breathe. And it regulates weather patterns and climate and the circulatory system of nutrients around our whole planet. So it's just, yeah, the biggest and most important ecosystem that we have really is the ocean. It's the heart of our planet. It's the foundation of life on Earth. So it is something that we really need to be paying attention to, particularly because the ocean is really in a state of collapse. Like everything that's happening to the ocean, we need to know about it, we need to care about it, and we need to start taking action, because we can't function on a planet without a healthy ocean.
Mm, so true. And yet we don't have to go all the way to the ocean to get connected. You mentioned the air we breathe being produced by the oceans, but we all are connected to the waterways that ultimately feed the ocean, and the sins that we do here to our local Beargrass Creek then impact the Ohio River and the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico, right? So it's often difficult for us to see all those connections because we're not trained to think ecologically and in terms of Earth systems, but it's so important, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like when you think about the effect that of things moving, particularly, yeah, through river systems, everything leads into the ocean. And so you've got pollution in terms of runoff from agriculture, nutrients, nitrogen, fertilizers, and pesticides entering the ocean, causing eutrophication and causing dead zones in a lot of places, which are areas that are devoid of oxygen, right? So if a fish swims into that area, they can't breathe, they end up suffocating. There's 400 of these deoxygenated areas in the ocean, and that's, yeah, all a direct result of something we're doing on land that we might not think is connected at all, you know, our agricultural practices on land, totally affecting the ocean. And then when you think about things like plastic, you know, so many rivers end up carrying plastic pollution to the ocean, affecting it, even if we don't think we're touching the ocean, we are.
Hart, I know you do a lot of work with promoting more sustainable landscapes, right? And helping people rip out their yards and put in something useful. What is the connection there to the oceans?
Well, a lot of it is like what Julia was saying. There's a gigantic myth that we have to use chemical fertilizers and we have to use toxic pesticides. But in addition to how those degrade the soil and degrade our biological diversity on land, they also result in the dead zones in the sea that Julia is talking about. So that's the best example I can think of and you know, if you hear about, you know, farmers need fertilizers, it's just not true.
Mm.
It's been shown, like farmers like Gabe Brown, for just the best example I can think of, author of Dirt to Soil, can show you how to have a productive, profitable farm without chemical fertilizers. In fact, chemical fertilizers degrade the quality of your soil year after year after year, and they are the cause of most of the water pollution in our major rivers and also in our And it's not just agriculture. It's like, I think, you know, on a per acre basis, there's far more fertilizer and toxic pesticides that are produced from our so-called landscaping, than from agriculture. So it's something that everybody has a hand in, really.
Julie, do you want to explain for our listeners a little more the connection there? If I put Miracle-Gro on my lawn or some other True Green or some other crap, right? Chemical fertilizers that then How does that create a dead zone at the mouth of the Mississippi?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the largest source of this is agriculture. But when you think about it, lawns are actually one of the largest agricultural crops that we have.
Yeah.
In terms of the amount of area that they take up. So, yeah, it's a huge issue. And the way that this ends up reaching the ocean is because when it rains, there's then runoff. And, you know, a lawn, for example, the plants do not have very deep roots. Whereas if you're growing native plants, the water tends to soak into the soil. But water tends to run off something like a lawn or, you know, kind of a monocrop agricultural field and goes into the riverways. The riverways make their way into the ocean and the water ends up there along with whatever it brings with it. And the kind of process of eutrophication, what they call it, when these excess nutrients enter the water, basically it causes a bloom in the populations of algae. So you see these, yeah, huge growths in algae, and then the algae end up, there's not enough animals to eat all of that algae, so the algae ends up decomposing in the water. And the decomposition process, the bacteria use up a lot of the oxygen in the water. So that's how we end up with these areas that are quite devoid of oxygen. It's just this influx of way more nutrients than the ocean can handle.
Yeah, the life under the sea needs oxygen just as we do above, right? Our guest today here, coming from all the way from Ontario in our virtual studio, is Julia Barnes, 12-time award-winning environmental documentarian. We're talking about her first film, Sea of Life, but there's also a film about renewable energy at Bright Green Lies. And we also have in the studio with us Ruth Newman. I'm Justin Mogg, and Hart Hagen is here too. And we're all encouraging you this week to go to forwardradio.org and pledge your support to this all volunteer powered, listener sponsored community radio. Ruth, do we have some big grant coming in that's going to pay all our bills soon?
I wish.
I wish, right? Do you know any really rich philanthropists who are funding this radio station?
No.
Who's paying for this, Ruth?
You out there, yeah. You guys, our extended family.
That's right. We rely entirely on listener sponsorship, which seems unbelievable. But think about it in the analogy of the oceans, right? One little drop here and there trickling down makes a stream and then a river and then an ocean of support for community radio. It just takes a few bucks from each and every one of you to help sustain us and keep us on the air. Of course, the more listeners we have, the more raindrops. So another great thing you can do for us is spread the word about the station, share out our podcast, share out our website, let people know that 106.5 is a unique spot on the radio dial where you're going to hear conversations like this that you won't get anywhere else. We're so excited to be live broadcasting here on Monday at 6:18 on a beautiful afternoon here in Louisville, Kentucky. We want you to go to forwardradio.org, and we want to thank you live on the air for your contributions right now. We have 6 donors already, Ruth, who've helped us get to over 10% of our goal. This donor right here, he's a good guy. He knows the station, right?
I think he does.
Shout out Avery Kohlers, one of the co-founders, I would say, of the station. He had his show Ethics Forward on our station real early days. Thank you so much, Avery, for your generous contribution to the station. It looks like he might be picking up on one of those shout out sponsor a days. So this is a new thing we've added this year where for a $100 donation, you can get your own personal message broadcast on our station throughout the day on whatever date you choose. Maybe you got a birthday or an anniversary or a graduation or other special occasion coming up, or you could promote an event or an organization or your local business. Just broadcast your message and you could do it in your voice or in ours for the $100. I can't wait to hear what Avery wants to say on the air. It'd be great to have his voice back on the air. And then Snake Jones has also contributed as well. Thank you so much, Snake, for your support, for serving on our board of directors, another important volunteer role. Enid Redman deserves a big thank you. It looks like Enid picked up on one of our Forward Radio t-shirts. We have them in both long and short sleeve and whatever size you need. Same thing with Rob Weber. Thank you, Rob, so much for your contribution. And both Ruth and I also kicked off this pledge drive with some donations. We don't just volunteer. We also contribute contribute financially. So if you can help us out, go to fordradio.org right now during our pledge drive. We'll thank you live on the air here as we discuss the oceans. So we have already talked about dead zones and the connection to fertilizers. What are some other threats, Julia, that we're really seeing amplified in the oceans right now that maybe we've never seen before? I mean, I remember learning about dead zones and certainly in the 90s, if not the 80s, but some things are starting to happen that we've never seen before, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the problems are really accelerating and we're learning about new ones all the time. One of the issues facing the ocean and kind of another connection to what we're doing on land that most people probably haven't heard about is something called ocean acidification. So I think all of us are familiar with the effects that carbon dioxide emissions are having on the atmosphere, and we hear all the time about climate change. What most people don't realize is a significant amount of the carbon dioxide that we put up into the atmosphere, about 30% of it, ends up getting absorbed into the ocean. And right. when carbon dioxide dissolves in seawater, it makes the water more acidic. And in a more acidic environment, animals who build shells or skeletons have a much harder time forming, or at a certain point, they simply can't form at all anymore. So this is something that affects almost all life in the ocean, from plankton, the tiny little plankton that we talked about earlier, who are so important to the whole, you know, functioning of life on the planet.
Yeah.
They're also the base of the oceanic food web. They feed almost everyone in the ocean, directly or indirectly. But it also affects fish and shellfish, and it affects coral reefs and their ability to grow and build skeletons. Coral reefs are really important to the ocean. They're a key ecosystem because they are home to 25% of all species in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Huge amount, but they cover less than 1% of the seafloor. So the density of life on a coral reef is really incredible. They're the most biodiverse ecosystems that we know of on the planet. So if you lose corals, you're losing all of that life along with them.
I've heard them equated to the rainforests of the ocean, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you hear that a lot.
Really special places that need extra attention. Where are these coral reefs in our oceans?
Coral reefs are typically found in the kind of tropical regions of the world. They're in warmer water, which has worked out well for them historically, but now as the waters are becoming much warmer than they should be, you know, another result of the carbon dioxide pollution is that the oceans are heating up, and the oceans are heating up a lot faster than the atmosphere. And so kind of what we're experiencing in terms of warming is actually happening 10 times faster in the ocean. The ocean has absorbed 90% of the excess heat from climate change. So as a result, we're already seeing big changes in the distribution and the migration of fish. But corals are stuck where they are.
Right.
They can't move.
They can't run away.
Yeah, the water gets too hot for them. They have to live with it or not. And unfortunately, what we're seeing lately is corals do this thing called bleaching when the water becomes too hot for them to tolerate. So they get stressed. And normally they have these symbiotic relationship with algae living inside their tissue. The algae are called zooxanthellae. They produce a lot of the nutrients that the coral needs to survive. They're also what gives the coral its color.
Yeah.
So if you look at a coral and you see like a brown color or a kind of greenish color, whatever it is, you're actually seeing the algae. Their skin is basically see-through. So when corals get stressed, they release those algae into the water column. They get rid of them. They can't handle the kind of excess nutrients that are being produced. So then the coral looks white because you're seeing straight through to its skeleton. So that's why it's called bleaching. But also without those algae producing nutrients and feeding the coral in this reciprocal relationship, the corals can't survive. So if bleaching happens too often or for the water's too warm for too long, really not good for corals.
So it is possible that the algae would recolonize the coral if the damage wasn't too extensive. Is that how it works?
Yeah, that can happen. And sometimes corals can recover from a bleaching event. It really depends how severe that is, how long the water temperatures stay warm, and the kind of interval between bleaching events. So I've talked to some coral scientists who say, like, if there's a bleaching event on a coral reef every 10 years, if they're spaced 10 years apart, reefs can kind of handle that. They can kind of bounce back from that. But anything shorter time frame than that, anything closer together in terms of the intervals between bleaching events, can't survive.
It can't survive. Wow. And so the bleaching is caused by warming of the oceans, but did you say acidification as well?
Yeah, acidification is a whole other issue, but it's also, they're both caused by carbon dioxide. So one of them is directly caused by the warming of the ocean. The other is caused by the ocean absorbing the carbon dioxide. And then these two kind of effects of carbon pollution combined tend to have a synergistic effect in terms of the how detrimental they are to coral reefs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is it true, too, that coral reefs can be sort of loved to death by humans, where there's too many humans touching the corals or swimming around that it can actually cause problems?
Yeah, oh, for sure. There's so many issues with how humans interact with reefs. Definitely don't touch a coral. Like, they don't like to be touched. That can be really harmful. But even something like when you go swimming on a beach, if you're wearing sunscreen, the chemicals from that sunscreen can get into the seawater, and that can actually be really damaging to coral reefs.
Wow.
So now you're starting to see a lot of products coming out that are like reef-safe sunscreen, and they're just made with minerals because people are catching on to the fact that, yeah, even something like wearing sunscreen, even if you're not directly swimming on a coral reef, that's affecting corals. Also, plastic pollution. If a little piece of like microplastic is touching the skin of a coral, it makes the coral much more susceptible to diseases. It turns out it has a really detrimental effect on the coral's immune system. So a coral that is touching a piece of plastic is, yeah, so much more susceptible to disease than one that isn't. So yeah, there's all of these kinds of effects that we're finding out about.
Is sedimentation an issue too for some coral reefs, where if we're doing erosive practices on the land, whether it's agriculture or anything else, that sometimes they can get buried?
Yep, definitely. And they can be smothered, like even if, yeah, just a bit of sedimentation in the water, because a lot of them are filter feeders, and that can, you know, really clog them up. It can also mean that they're not getting enough light for the algae inside of them to be able to photosynthesize and produce the nutrients that the coral needs. So yeah, sedimentation can affect them in all sorts of ways. Corals typically evolved to live in clear water.
Yeah. And it's not just the coral that we're concerned about. Like you started this conversation out, this is 25% of the species in the oceans are found only here, right? It's actually the infrastructure for a protective, unique ecosystem, right?
It is, yes, because when corals grow, because they're striving for sunlight to help the zooxanthellae photosynthesize better, they end up building these skeletons that form these really complex structures. And those structures, created by the bone structure of the coral, are home to so many different animals. Yeah, they form this complex reef system where different fish can come and live and make homes in the little crevices in the coral reef, and worms and eels and all sorts of creatures. And yeah, if you go on a dive on a healthy coral reef, it's this incredible, magical experience where you're seeing so much life and so much color and so many different interactions that you get to witness between all of these species who are living there. There's so much complexity, so many different relationships, so much going on. And you get to see everything from like the huge charismatic species that we typically associate with the ocean, like sharks and sea turtles and stingrays. But you also see tiny little fish just like darting around the coral reef, and like bright blue and bright red. And sometimes the littlest fish have the biggest personalities. They'll come up to a diver.
Clown fish, right?
You get too close and they'll come right up to you and they'll be like, no, go away. And they're like tiny. But yeah, they assert themselves.
I have had the unique pleasure just once, I think, in my life of snorkeling over a reef in the Caribbean. Hart, have you ever done that?
I have. I went to Cozumel a number of years ago. I like saying that you don't see colors like that anymore.
Right.
There's just such a huge array of colors that are just stunning and unforgettable. A camera does not. Like, in those days, a camera would not capture those colors or anything close.
Ruth, have you ever swum with the coral?
No, and I almost did because I was in Costa Rica last month in a tropical rainforest, and I was also on the beach. And I had the opportunity, and I didn't do it.
Oh, missed your chance.
I did. But I also saw incredible diversity in the tropical jungle where I was staying. It was incredible and sustainable.
That's right.
As well. And that's going to be on my program tomorrow.
Oh, excellent.
Matter of fact, as I interviewed some of the indigenous people there.
Great. Election Connection, heard on our station every week. When can people hear it?
Tuesdays at 6 p.m., Wednesdays at 10 a.m. and again Wednesday at midnight.
And you are listening to a special live edition of Sustainability Now here at 6:31 on a beautiful Monday here on April 1st on Forward Radio. My name is Justin Mogg. You just heard from Ruth Newman and Hart Hagen, two other volunteers at the station. Our guest today is Julia Barnes, joining us from Ontario, 12-time award-winning environmental filmmaker. We're talking about her film Sea of Life. You can learn more about it at seaoflifemovie.com. We're all assembled here today to encourage you to support your listening. And if you love what you hear, you need to chip in a few bucks to keep us on the air. And I forgot to bring my bell, but I would be ringing it right now because we just got a donation from Mary Williams. Thank you, Mary, for stepping up to support Forward Radio. That's seven donors now. We're up to $819 out of our $7,000 we want to raise by our birthday party on Saturday, April 13th, which is 5 to 8 at Logan Street Market. Please join us. It'll be a silent auction. It is a free event. Of course, we always take donations. If you want to throw a few bucks in our jar, we'll take it there. But yeah, the silent auction is a great way to pick up on some great items, unique things that you can't get any other time of year, and also support the station. So don't miss that on Saturday, April 13th. And we'll have Charles Booker joining us for a live conversation that day, as well as our friends virtually from across the pond. We're talking about the oceans. They're on the other side of it, over in East Leeds Community Radio. We are making connections internationally here at Forward Radio to keep you connected with what matters here locally. And I do love talking about the oceans on this show from time to time, even though we are far away from the oceans here in Louisville, Kentucky, and it seems... Could that possibly be relevant? Well, we've already discussed the many ways it is. And then, of course, another big way that people connect with the oceans is with what they eat, right? Julia, tell us, how much of our human diet comes from the oceans?
How much of our human diet? Well, it depends who you are and where you are.
Yeah.
It varies. But yeah, industrial fishing is having a huge impact on the ocean. And yeah, it's something that most people maybe don't realize what the effect is, because you think of fishing and you think of like putting a rod in the water and waiting for a fish to bite.
Yeah.
And in comparison to what is actually happening on the ocean, that would be a much more sustainable thing to do.
Yes.
But what we see in practice is large-scale industrial fisheries that are essentially, I've heard it referred to as like factory fishing. Like the ships are massive. They drag huge nets through the water column, scooping up everything in their path. I'm talking about things like trawling or bottom trawling. A lot of the fishing methods that are being done today, like purse seining, but also longline fishing with like rows of baited hooks that can stretch for miles. There's all sorts of really indiscriminate fishing methods being used in the ocean that are just taking life out of the ocean at a rate much faster than it can reproduce. And, you know, so a lot of the fisheries in the ocean are being pushed to the point of collapse or being, you know, overexploited. But also, a lot of these fishing practices are incredibly wasteful. So it's estimated that 54 billion pounds of fish is caught every year and then discarded, thrown back into the ocean, because it wasn't the target species. It wasn't as commercially valuable as the fish that they're going for. So yeah, often when they do these things like dragging a big net or employing all of these hooks that stretch for miles in the ocean, they're catching not just the fish that they want to catch, they're catching sharks and sea turtles and other species of fish, maybe smaller fish that are, not worth as much on the market. But they also catch even things like seabirds and marine mammals. And,
wow.
Yeah, the list just goes on and on and on. And you can see, like, really, you know, horrifying footage of the results of these types of fishing that are going on. And, you know, oftentimes we also hear about, like, ghost fishing gear, right? So, like, when a net breaks free or, you know, a fishing line just gets abandoned in the ocean, nobody's coming back and checking on it, but it's still floating around in the ocean, catching everything that comes into its path. Yeah, so we have this, really negative legacy of the commercial fishing operations that have been going on now, really accelerating in the last half century. We've seen a 90% decline in the populations of large fish in the ocean.
Wow.
Tend to be the fish that people like to eat, the more valuable species of fish. Species like bluefin tuna are particularly hard hit because as they are becoming more and more rare, people are paying more and more money to buy them. So bluefin tuna, I forget what the numbers are, but I think some of them have gone for like over $1 million for a single fish.
Whoa.
And it's this kind of like economics of extinction where like this paradoxical thing where we should be leaving them alone, but people are more and more incentivized to catch more of them, which is then contributing further to their extinction. So it's quite a scary situation for some of these species of fish.
What becomes of all the bycatch, the unintentionally caught species? Are they all killed, or is it possible to throw them back? Or what is the process in industrial fishing?
Great question. So a lot of people might think that the fish could survive this process. A lot of fish just like kind of get squished in the process of dragging these huge nets up. But worse than that, fish have swim bladders in their bodies that regulate, like, help them float or sink, or they kind of regulate where they are in the water column. And when fish are pulled from the deep ocean under high pressure to the surface where there's almost no pressure, the bladders in their bodies explode.
So
the fish, they don't survive this process. So they're thrown back into the ocean, but they're just discarded as waste. Most of them don't live.
It is troubling. So for people who want to eat fish, should they eat farmed fish? Is that a solution?
Thank you for bringing that up, because a lot of people do think that farmed fish takes the pressure off the ocean, which seems logical. Unfortunately, there's a lot of problems with fish farming, and a really great book, if people want to learn more about this issue, is called Not on My Watch by Alexandra Morton. And she's been researching the salmon farming industry off the coast of British Columbia for a long time. And so she really details how negatively that's affected the wild populations of salmon because of the spread of disease from farmed fish to wild fish, the spread of parasites, because fish farms tend to be they're open pens, right? So wild fish can swim by them, and they tend to be these reservoirs of disease because you're packing all of these fish really close together.
Mm.
They're not usually nourished very well. The conditions are just really bad, like with any kind of factory farming where animal populations are very densely packed. But the other problem with fish farming is that farmed fish are usually being fed fish from the ocean.
Yeah.
So they're actually catching more fish. It takes like 7 pounds of wild caught fish to produce 1 pound of farm raised tuna or salmon. So it's having even a bigger impact on the ocean than if you were just eating the smaller fish from the ocean directly.
Wow. I don't eat any animals, so I don't have to directly face this fact, but I know there are people who want to eat fish, and here locally, there's a movement to try and eat more invasive species of fish in our local waterways, like the Asian carp, which is really problematic in our local waterways. So that might be a solution, probably an imperfect one. I don't know about the bycatch situation there. I don't think you fish locally in our streams with giant nets, but there is is another big issue. I know we're running out of time, so I wanted to be sure to touch on this, which is the issue of deep sea mining. Now, I'm familiar with, you know, offshore drilling for oil, natural gas. We've heard about that. We've seen the deep sea horizon explode in the Gulf of Mexico, right? This is something different, though, deep sea mining. You want to talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. Deep sea mining is another one of these things that is not on the radar for most people. Like, it's a very little known issue, but it is something that is being pushed really hard in the background. Like, the industry is really pushing to try and make this happen very quickly. So it is this like looming imminent threat to the ocean. Corporations are targeting an area of the ocean between Hawaii and Mexico called the Clarion-Clipperton Zone. That's where they're going after right now. It's this huge stretch of the ocean. It's as wide as North America.
Wow.
And if all the mines that are being planned for that area end up going ahead, it would be the largest contiguous mining area on the planet. And it would be happening 4,000 feet beneath the surface of the ocean.
Wow.
And there's a lot of problems that go along with doing something like that. One of the big concerns for scientists who are looking at this issue is the plumes of sediment that would be created by mining the deep sea, both in the deep where these house-sized mining machines are crawling along the seabed and scooping up everything in their path, because the sediment in the deep sea is very fine particulate matter. Mm. And it doesn't behave like sand, it's much lighter. So when it gets kicked up, it stays suspended in the water column for sometimes months at a time. And this is something that if a fish breathes it in, it damages their gills, it damages their ability to breathe, it can smother them. There have been some experiments looking at how sediment affects deep sea corals, and they expose them to different levels of sediment that might be expected from deep sea mining. Not a single coral survived the experiment.
Wow.
Except for the control group.
Wow.
So, corals and sponges in the deep sea, this is something that would be really detrimental to them, any animal in the deep sea. But corals and sponges in the deep sea are some of the oldest organisms on our planet. Deep sea corals can be 4,000 years old.
Wow.
Deep sea sponges can be 11,000 years old.
Wow.
It's incredible to think about.
Wow.
Species in the deep sea tend to have much longer lifespans because the deep sea is very cold. Metabolisms are slower. Everything just happens on a different time scale down there. So it's a really incredible place, full of biodiversity, full of species that, kind of boggle the mind. They look incredible whenever you get to see footage and images of the deep sea. But the thing about deep sea mining is it doesn't just affect the deep ocean, because it involves pumping sediments and the mined materials up to ships on the surface.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of waste material going to be dumped back into the water column. So there are some estimates that each mining vessel would produce 2 to 6 million cubic feet of sediment wastewater per day
that
it's operating. Yep,
wow.
Which is the equivalent of 22,000 dump trucks full of sediment being pumped.
Oh, that won't hurt anything. The ocean's big.
Yeah. So, there's been some modeling done in terms of like how far this would travel with the currents in the ocean, and just taking this material that doesn't settle and doesn't settle very quickly. And of course, it can stretch from like Kiribati to Hawaii. Like, it's just this huge area, and that was just a study from like the impacts of one mining site, one mining machine. And the thing about this is, like, the area that they're targeting for mining right now is this key migratory area for a whole bunch of different species, from big fish to like whale sharks and great white sharks frequently the area. There's like so much life there.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these would be impacted by breathing in this material that is considered toxic to fish. It's deadly to them.
Yeah.
This is not good. This is a huge swath of the ocean that they're talking about making basically uninhabitable for a bunch of marine life.
Wow. Well, we are all out of time, which is such a shame because I feel like we're just dipping our toes in this great big ocean. But is there anything we can leave our audience with so they stop slashing their wrists for a second? What is a hopeful thing we can talk about? What action can people take? What can we do to reverse the situation in our oceans? I know it's not easy, and I know you are wisely cautioning us against greenwashing of anything, but what should we do?
We need to leave the oceans alone. If we let them recover, we can see amazing things happen. And one of the places that I was very lucky to visit when I was making Sea of Life was an area of the ocean that had at one point been heavily overfished and degraded, and there was very little life in it. But they left the area alone for like 20 years, and there was this huge resurgence. Like, life bounced back, the ocean recovered. We saw fish populations increase by 450%. And yeah, I went there, you know, 20 years after it had been declared a marine protected area, and it was thriving. It was teeming with life. It was so full of fish. It was one of the most beautiful places I had ever seen. So we know that the ocean can recover. Life can come back. It can do very well if we let it. And that's really the key. And that's the crossroads that we're at today. Are we going to keep destroying? Are we going to keep sucking all the life out of the ocean and now trying to suck out like minerals and metals? Or are we going to leave it alone and say, hey, you know, we actually need a healthy ocean in order to survive. Let's protect it. Let's get in the way and stop these industries from being able to do the harm that they're doing to the ocean. We need more of that. We need more activism to protect life in the sea.
Well, Julia Barnes, director of Sea of Life, which you can learn more about at seaoflifemovie.com. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And thank you for giving us a view on the oceans and helping us see the problems and the opportunities. This is such important work. Thank you, Julia.
Thanks so much for having me. It was great talking to you.
Absolutely. And thank you, Hart, for suggesting that we speak with Julia today. This has been such a great pleasure. And thank you, Ruth Newman, for being here, too. We're encouraging people to go to fordradio.org to hear during our pledge drive. We're trying to raise $7,000 by the time of our birthday party. We've got 7 donors so far. Again, thank you, Mary Williams, for donating here during our live Sustainability Now on Monday afternoon. Anything else you want to say, Ruth, to encourage people to give or to come? Coming out to the birthday party on April 13th?
Oh, well, the party is going to be such a blast.
Yeah, I know.
I know. There's going to be so much going on, and I really encourage people to come and join in. I think the most important thing is that we have this frequency, and it is a public frequency, and we invite anyone and everyone who has a burning issue, and that is why we're here, is to keep this frequency connected to our local community.
That's right. If you support that idea, we need you to go to fordradio.org and support us with your dollars. Thank you, Julia and Hart. We're going to transition away to our community action calendar right now with a whole bunch of things coming up in the community this week that you can get engaged with here in Louisville to promote sustainability. So stay tuned, my friends. Primavera, springtime here in Louisville, Kentucky. You're listening to a special live edition Sustainability Now with me, Justin Mogg, here on your community radio station, Forward Radio, WFMP, LP, Louisville. We broadcast to you at 106.5 FM, and we live stream wherever you are at forwardradio.org. If you go there right now, you'll see a big red button at the top to donate to our pledge drive. We need your support, and I'd love to thank you live on the air. We've got 10 minutes left to give and get thanked right here on Sustainability Now, but get your pencils sharpened, your calendars out. Let's take a look at what's going on this week for sustainability in town. Well, there is going to be a workshop tomorrow at U of L about guerrilla gardening. It's at 4 o'clock on Tuesday, April 2nd. Join us in U of L's Sustainable Garden Commons, which is next to the Baptist Center, to learn some successful strategies for beautifying and feeding the world in abandoned and ignored urban spaces. If you're like me and you've walked by an ugly vacant lot and thought, farm it, then this is the workshop for you. We'll talk about seed bombs. We'll be making some. We'll talk about etiquette and anything else you need to be empowered to make the city grow. It's part of a spring series of garden workshops hosted by U of L's Garden Commons, which is a shared, collectively managed space open to participation anytime from anyone in the community, and all who come are welcome to a share in the harvest. Learn more at louisville.edu/sustainability. Same time on Tuesday at 4 p.m., U of L is also hosting a virtual sustainability roundtable focused on Beyond Plastics Louisville. It's at 4 p.m. online on Tuesday the 2nd. You can join U of L's Sustainability Council for their spring sustainability roundtable series. And the guest this Tuesday will be Pam Raitt, a community activist and organizer who recently launched Beyond Plastics Louisville, part of a nationwide grassroots movement to raise awareness about plastic pollution and to promote alternatives to single-use plastics. After decades spent promoting recycling, we all know that less than 9% of all plastics produced have ever been recycled. Where's the rest of it going? Yeah, to our oceans, to our soils, to our waterways. We can't recycle our way out of the plastic problem. So Beyond Plastics seeks and supports sustainable solutions. Come learn about them this Tuesday, 4 p.m. online. You can find the link to join, no registration necessary, at louisville.edu/sustainability. Now, coming up on Wednesday, April 3rd at 9:30 a.m. There's going to be a Colombian civil rights and environmental lawyer, Ali Bantu Ashanti, speaking at U of L's main Ekstrom Library, room 258. That's the Ann Braden Institute for Social Justice Research. They're going to be having a meet and greet with this civil rights and environmental lawyer from the Racial Justice Collective. Bantu directs Colombia's Racial Justice Collective and serves as an expert commissioner for justice reform. You can meet him on his international tour stop here in Louisville. Ali works with collective Afro-Colombian lawyers to defend young people facing police and army repression during massive anti-racist street protests of recent years. Whether in Kentucky or Colombia, all of our struggles for liberation are connected, my friends. That is an important message of this tour. And you can enjoy a light breakfast and a chance to talk with Ali about his work with staff from Vocal Kentucky, who are coordinating his visit here to Louisville. Vocal Kentucky, the Kentucky Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression, showing up, Louisville showing up for racial justice, and the Ann Braden Institute are hosting events throughout the day. Again, it starts at 9:30 at U of L's Ekstrom Library, room 258, for a meet and greet. Then at 2 p.m., there's going to be a civil rights history tour at the Muhammad Ali Center, 144 North 6th Street. At 4 p.m., there'll be a community discussion at the Carl and Ann Braden Memorial Center on West Broadway, 208 West Broadway. And at 6 p.m., there'll be a documentary screening at Vocal Kentucky's headquarters at 723 South Brook Street. You can learn more about it at louisville.edu/sustainability. Now, on Thursday, April 4th at 11 a.m., there's going to be an environmental health sciences seminar on the work of air justice. This is taking place virtually or in person at U of L's Clinical and Translational Research Building at Hancock and Muhammad Ali in room 124. Join U of L's Center for Integrative Environmental Health Sciences and the Department of Pharmacology and Toxicology for this seminar with Megan Poole, Assistant Professor of English, and Ebony Neal Cochran, Co-Director of REACT, the Rubber Town Emergency Action, a grassroots organization of residents living near or at the fence line of a cluster of chemical facilities we commonly refer to as Rubber Town. Her work helps residents fight for strong laws to stop toxic air pollution at the local, state, and federal levels, and for full disclosure of chemical exposures. Megan Poole teaches English at the U of L, where she specializes in rhetoric, feminist science studies, and science and technical writing. Her research considers how rhetoric can bring the sciences to value non-traditional ways of knowing, such as embodied knowledge that comes through lived experience. You won't want to miss it this Thursday, 11 a.m. to noon, in person or online. Find more information at louisville.edu/sustainability. Also Thursday at 5 p.m. on April 4th, it's the inaugural Baldwin King Memorial Lecture featuring Harmony Holiday. It's going to be taking place at Roots 101, the African American Museum at 124 North 1st Street. U of L's Enviro Institute's Baldwin King Project invites everyone to join us for this inaugural Baldwin King Memorial Lecture. On the anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., we welcome Sister Harmony Holiday to deliver the inaugural lecture. You can meet the speaker and enjoy light refreshments at 5, and the program begins at 6. It's built around the audience participation around the conversation of what would James Baldwin and Martin Luther King Jr. think of America today. It's free and open to the public, but tickets are required. You can find the link to register at louisville.edu/sustainability. Now, coming up this weekend on Saturday, April 6th, the Lucky Horseshoe neighborhood around Churchill Downs is going to be having a tree planting. They're encouraging people to come on out at 10 a.m. at the meetup location of the Wellman Memorial Wesleyan Church, 3220 Bohannon Avenue. We seek your volunteers of support to help restore the tree canopy in the Lucky Horseshoe neighborhood. Join us to help improve the health of the residents through urban forestry as we plant 33 trees. Trained citizen volunteers, citizen foresters will lead groups of volunteers to properly plant trees on residential and business properties as well as right-of-ways. No experience is necessary. Everyone's welcome to come play in the dirt with us. It's sponsored by MSD in partnership with Louisville Metro District 15. It's part of a Building Our Blocks campaign. There'll be a lot of other things happening that day. Registration begins at 9:30 a.m. at Wellman Memorial Wesleyan Church on Bohannon Avenue. Also on Saturday the 6th, the Trees Louisville will be doing a sapling giveaway at Paris Town Hall's Garden Show, which is from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 724 Brent Street. They'll be giving away 250 saplings of tulip poplar, catalpa, willow oak, sweet bay magnolia, and black gum. You won't want to miss it on Saturday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. in Paris Town. Also on Saturday, April 6th at 11 a.m., there'll be a solarized Louisville workshop with Icon Solar at Louisville's Free Public Library, the main library across the alley from us here at Forward Radio, 301 York Street, in person in the boardroom at 11 a.m. on Saturday. Both Icon Solar and Pure Power Solar are offering the same standard panel price, along with a 12 to 18% discount, ensuring that all participants receive the best possible value for their investment in solar energy. With the unfortunate rise of predatory solar companies in our region, Solarize Louisville seeks to protect you, the consumer, interested in investing in clean energy. In addition to these significant savings, participants in Solarize Louisville are eligible for a 30% tax credit through the Federal Inflation Reduction Act, furthering reducing the costs of transitioning to clean, renewable energy. The Solarize Louisville programs open to all homeowners in our region, including Jefferson, Oldham, Spencer, Shelby, and Bullitt counties here in Kentucky, as well as across the river in Harrison, Floyd, and Clark counties in Indiana. The Solarize Louisville team will be hosting this in-person and virtual workshops too later, where you can learn more about installing solar on your property. To learn more about Solarize Louisville, register for this workshop or take the first step towards transitioning to renewable energy. Visit solarizelouisville.com. And lastly, I want to let you know that on Sunday, April 7th, the Time Bank is hosting their monthly potluck, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the KFTC headquarters in Smoketown, 735 Lambton Street. First Sundays is their new meeting time. Make this a new year to connect, get connected one by one. Bring a friend or bring a few. Bring a dish to share or usable plate and utensils if you have them. We're trying to reduce waste. Anyone attending the potluck can log one time dollar for bringing a dish to share and another for helping set up and another for helping clean up, so you could earn up to $3 time for having fun and getting connected. We'll have a giveaway table as well, so bring anything you want to offer up to others. And the time bank, of course, is now free to everyone, and they are no longer doing background checks, so we are trying to reduce the barriers to participation in the Louisville Time Bank. You can learn more about it at louisvilletimebank.org. That's all the time we have for today here on Sustainability Now. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. I look forward to being back in your ears again next week. Please go to forwardradio.org and support our pledge drive. Thank you so much to all 7 donors and Mary Williams, who gave during this hour. You're the best, Mary. Thank you so much. We'll be back in your ears again in 1 week's time, my friends. Be well.